FM. The Honest Truth with Benito Vergatini on Smile 90.4 FM.
Earlier on this evening, I caught up with businessman Stephen Larkin. He's based in London. He's the CEO of Africa New Energies. He's a chartered accountant by training. He co-founded LIPA Networks in 2008. He also advised the South African government on the creation of solar industry. And on the strength of that, was in fact invited by the Namibian government to develop a national stranded national gas to solar strategy for that country, which was funded by the United Nations. Now, he's certainly a very acute businessman who travels back home to South Africa very often, and in fact got a bit fed up with all the bad news and crits that South Africa had appeared to be getting overseas. And in fact, he took the step by reaching out to the Financial Times, saying that there were so many good news stories from South Africa. I spoke to him about this. As a businessman who's based in the UK, what is the general view about South Africa and our economy?
Well, that was kind of the point of this Financial Times intervention, is that the sentiment around South Africa is negative, and in my opinion, unduly negative. The South Africa that you read in the newspapers is not the same as the South Africa that I experience. And, you know, the problem is that most people don't go back. They don't experience it. So we wanted to highlight some cases where South Africa isn't just world-class, but is world-leading in some of the most important areas in innovation in a myriad of different areas. And, you know, I think that there was a very surprised response when people were saying, wow, we didn't know that they've got a cutting-edge, world-leading intervention into making drug discovery cheaper, that they're 20% of the fintech development in London is going on in Cape Town, that Cape Town is generating $12 billion of profit, or 4% of GDP, for Amazon Web Services. The perception is all around, well, you know, I'm not going to bore you with it, but, you know, South Africa has had challenges in the last few years in terms of political risk, corruption, etc. But that really isn't the full picture, and yet that is the picture that journalists seem to latch onto in the last few years.
You were speaking about South Africa being a world leader in so many areas, and you were chatting to me earlier about the innovation that was highlighted recently in the Financial Times, and the timing of that particular publication also coincided with the World Economic Forum at Davos. And I believe, Stephen, it was also the first time in about 8 years that the Financial Times had written something positive about South Africa. Can you share detail around that innovation and how you were involved in this process?
Yeah. Well, let's talk, that's actually a two-part question, so let's talk about the innovation. What we wanted to do was to highlight where South Africa is world-leading. So examples include the pioneering work of Professor Kelly Chabale at the University of Cape Town, where University of Cape Town, through Kelly's pioneering work, is literally redefining how much drugs cost to produce. Now, I think you agree that healthcare is arguably the most important industry on earth, because keeping alive is kind of why we're here. And in America, on average, a drug costs between $1 billion and $2.5 billion. And American healthcare costs are so extreme that they are 17% of GDP. To give you an idea, America's healthcare costs are bigger than the Japanese economy, which is the world's third biggest economy. So if UCT and Professor Chabale can come up with a mechanism where they can create a drug for $40 million, We're talking about South Africa fundamentally changing the economics of drug discovery and becoming one of the most important biotech hubs in the world. But it shouldn't surprise you, because South Africa has a long, illustrious history. The old Rondebosch Boys High alumni, Max Thieler, won the Nobel Prize in 1951 for discovering an antidote to yellow fever. The CAT scan was a South African invention. South Africans were vitally involved in understanding genetics. Of course, the world's first transplant was famously done by Chris Barnard in the late 1960s. So Kele Tshabalala, I believe, is standing on the shoulders of giants. But it does really excite me that in this crucial area of innovation, that UCT and South Africa are actually taking a lead. Another area that the report highlighted, which is an area that I'm involved in, is that South Africa faces chronic energy challenges in areas that people don't really understand. Our coal is in the wrong place. We're three times more reliant on coal than the world average. Our emissions are too high because we use so much coal. Mossgas is going to close down in 2020, and $12 billion, or 4% of GDP, goes to Saudi Arabia, Angola, and Nigeria to pay for liquid hydrocarbons imports. So our work involves where we've worked very closely with the government, and they've been hugely supportive of our work, and where we've developed an algorithm that triples the probability of discovering onshore oil and gas so that we can reduce the carbon footprint and reduce the reliance on coal in South Africa. And again, this is using cutting-edge airborne surveying, satellite analysis, machine learning. You know, all the buzzwords in technology seem to be incorporated into this project. Another project that I think has huge implications on the rest of the world is that 3.5 billion people, or half of the world's population, don't yet have access to internet. And the majority of those people live in rural areas. Now, if we look at internet provision, it tends either to be by fixed line or by mobile. And mobile, particularly with the fancier technologies on the higher frequencies, tend not to work particularly well over long distances and in rural areas where you've got low population density. So one of the companies highlighted is a company called Africanopy, which won the first TV white space commercial test license in South African history, beating Microsoft and Google to the post.
Wow.
Tiny little startup. And they are going to be rolling out Wi-Fi services at $1 a gig to Richards Bay's people and Epangeni's people, 85,000 people at a test trial. And what's so exciting about them is that typically a mast needs 150 people per square kilometer to be economically viable for a traditional mobile telco to justify putting it in. This technology only needs 6 people per square kilometer, and that's approximately equal to the rural population density. The implications of this are huge for South Africa. About 24 million people don't have internet currently, and terrifyingly, up to 20% of very poor people's income is spent on mobile telecom voice calls. So if they can go onto data, they will spend a fraction of that on voice calls, because they will be doing it over WhatsApp rather than traditional mobile telecoms. But the implications on exports are enormous, because if South Africa can crack this technology, prove that it works, then there's that 3.5 billion person market that is available. Now, if we look at Facebook, they've got 1 billion users. If we look at Google, they've got fewer than 1 billion users. So this technology has the potential to be the biggest technology company on Earth. And that, I believe, is a crucial area where South Africa can use its very sophisticated innovation population that lives right next door to abject poverty to be able to come up with solutions for the developing world.
Stephen Larkin, CEO of Africa New Energies, joining us in discussion this evening on The Honest Truth. Stephen, when you're talking about Africanopy, I mean, that was a fascinating article because the article also spoke about Lesotho being pioneered with 5G technology. But when talking about increased capacity in the rural areas, they were referring to, is it television white space? How does that technology work?
You have to go back in time to understand that in the 1930s, it was actually pioneered by the British Broadcasting Corporation. They had a complete pick of spectra that could be suitable, and they picked 470 to 700 megahertz as the perfect spectrum to send a television signal. Why did they choose that? Well, that spectrum is able to travel far further than any other signal. Okay, so that became globally what was known as television spectrum. Now, it was an analog signal, and that analog signal is now being replaced by a digital signal that is 8 times more efficient in using the frequency to send the same amount of data, which means that 7/8 of that frequency is now available globally. Now, in places like South Africa, and even more so in the rest of Africa and west of Africa, most of those channels were never used in the first place, which means that that hugely valuable frequency that can travel tens of miles has not been used. And yet, tragically, people in rural areas in South Africa, but even more so in the rest of Africa, take Malawi, 94% of them Malawians don't have access to the internet. This signal could be the solution for rural internet globally because it is the cheapest way to disseminate that signal, and you need the fewest towers per square kilometer to do it. Well, fewest and the widest coverage per tower. And so this Africanopy TV white space trial is going to be watched by the world with enormous interest, particularly the developing world, where rural communities are absolutely desperate to be able to get onto the internet and to take it for granted the way we do.
It certainly speaks to innovation in South Africa, Stephen. Also mentioned in that supplement was Cape Town being cited as an innovation hotspot, particularly with creating the environment for entrepreneurs to thrive. And here I'm referring to your association with AEI, the Alumni Energy Investments. I love the model in terms of the fact that if me as a taxpayer invests in the work of Alumni Energy Investments, firstly, that investment is tax deductible, but that investment is then reinvested into entrepreneurs.
Yeah, look, I think, again, this is, I'm very close to tax legislation globally around innovation. And again, people look at me strangely when I say that the South African Revenue Services, SARS, has been one of the leading pioneers in using the tax system to encourage investment in entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs are the backbone of every economy. According to Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, 60% of all net jobs are created by startups, and 2% of those startups create 30% of them. When you take small and medium-sized enterprises in the United States, they create 110% of jobs when you include them with startups. In other words, government, big business actually destroy jobs, and all the jobs plus some are created by small business. Now, the South African government, unfortunately, with our history, faces a terrible legacy of a lack of skills and unemployment that is associated with that. And we don't need to go into why that has happened. But we all know it's the case that the country has an unacceptably high rate of unemployment. Now, the government cannot create enough jobs itself. If it did, the bond markets would crash and the fiscus would crash and the fiscal deficit would become unacceptably high. So government creating jobs has never been the solution and it never will be. So what the government did was to say, and we were very active in these discussions, is that who are those job creators? And the answer is, you've got to focus on that 30% of jobs created by the elite 2% of startups. Now, Section 12J of the Income Tax Act of 1962 was amended in 2009 that investors got 20% back if they invested in a high-risk startup. Now, we negotiated with the South African government to say, why don't you become more like the UK government with its enterprise investment schemes, where they have raised over £14 billion for startups, and the UK is now beating Silicon Valley in terms of pure startup funding because its tax system is supporting it. And the South African government, SARS and the Treasury agreed, and in 2014 they changed the Tax Act such that a marginal tax rate payer who pays 45% tax will get a full 100% tax deduction rather than 20%. They get 45% back. Now, we've then taken it to the next level because this is a key area of innovation that, again, South Africa is world-leading in. FinTech. Did you know that South Africans Google the words cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and Ethereum more often than any other country's population on Earth? So, and South Africans sort of punch above their weight in terms of leading innovation in cryptocurrency globally. And so what we've done is we've partnered up with a lot of cryptocurrency holders where we've used trading algorithms and to create profits that are then taxed as capital gains and integrated those profit integrated into SARS itself by becoming a third-party data provider. So it's all very compliant so that those people can invest the cryptocurrency profits and their taxes into startups. So this work, I shouldn't say we, it is the pioneering work of Sheikh Motsoaledi, who is one of the great emerging financial brains of South Africa and a huge innovator. And, you know, he actually became the first, the Visa coin that he created became the first digital currency in the world to integrate with a tax revenue system. And he's now in discussion with the UK government to do so. And he wants to get his Visa coin to be associated with tax compliance all over the world, but also supporting entrepreneurship. So that was another focus of the report, which, you know, does have the potential really to transform entrepreneurship funding globally. And again, with South Africa taking the lead.
Stephen, I think we're going to leave it there for this evening. Thank you for your time. It was incredibly insightful and just wonderful that these stories are out there, particularly in the international space, to showcase, in fact, what's happening here in South Africa.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for also providing your show as a mouthpiece. I think it's very important that we have a sense of balance in South Africa and we tell the good news stories as well as the bad news ones. And undoubtedly, this is a good news story that the Financial Times is changing its focus to say, yeah, the country's been through a few difficult years, but with its new leadership, the election coming up, there's a chance for that innovation to shine through, and South Africa can play a leading role in the world of innovation. So thank you very much. It's a great honor to be on the show. I hear it's the fastest growing in Cape Town.
Stephen Larkin, CEO of Africa New Energies, chatting to me earlier from London. Yeah, Stephen is being very generous, but I'll take it from a fellow Marist boy. By the way, the conversation was based around the Financial Times almost changing its tune and tone on South Africa for the first time in 8 years. It has published positive stories around South Africa. So positive, in fact, it included a supplement, South Africa Innovation, South Africa Trials, White Space to Fill Rural Internet Black Spots. Stephen mentioned that particular innovation, the company Africa Canopy doing that. Cape Town's Garage Inventors Who Beat the Droughts. There's another article in the supplement which looks at drug ATMs offer formula to beat chronic illness. The Meerkat Telescope putting South Africa at the forefront of astronomy. Entrepreneurs creating jobs, reducing inequality. These are some of the articles that form part of the innovation supplement. South African miners modernized to dig industry out of a hole, and digital newcomers take on established banks. Certainly worthwhile having a read through this. Google Financial Times and you can just key in the words South Africa